Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 243, being recorded on the 27th of August, 2018, with special guest Sibone Ku. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have a lot of our co-hosts today. We have Kale, Cynthia, Kendall, Russell, of course, our special guest Sibone as well. So we'll get to her in just a minute to talk about a very interesting service, which we've never discussed on the show before, so we're all excited to learn about it. But before that, let's get a quick roundup on all the Azure news for this week. And thanks, guys, for putting a lot of updates. Russell, we've missed you the last few weeks, so we're going to give you a shot to get started with some of the updates for us. Go ahead.
That's very kind. Yes, sorry, I've been absent. So the first one from me was around Azure API management. So Azure API management has got its own kind of repo where you can put the configuration changes up there and manage them. And you can do source control in there of that configuration, and you can push and pull from that. But it's always been a bit clunky in order to automate that as part of a proper DevOps orchestrated stream via VSTS, Visual Studio Online, as it used to be called. There's now been a release of a free extension that you can go and install that fixes a lot of those clunky issues for you and makes it a lot easier and a much nicer experience. So if you're doing things like versioning your APIs and stuff like that, you can manage it all through this extension, which I think is a nice little add-on.
That is indeed very nice, yeah. And so in the past, it's all been like copy and paste to your own VSTS repo or something like that. How did they do it before?
It was a separate repo, so it wasn't in your own VSTS repo. And I think it still is. I think this extension just automates or helps smooth over the automation of that. Process.
Got it. Very nice. And what else? So, who wants to go next? Let's see. Kale, you've got your blockchain stuff there, so.
Of course. We always have blockchain stuff. And Russell's also chiming in awesome with blockchain stuff. So, the big thing from last week, leading up, I guess, on the 20th, we did a post about this, the multi-member consortium support for our Workbench product. So we've been putting out releases of Workbench every month. We're on 1.3 right now, so the third release here. And in 1.2, we released the ability to attach to existing blockchain infrastructure. So you don't have to have Workbench do everything for you. You could go customize and build your network topology the way you like and then attach it to this API and this engine as part of Workbench. The new one allows us to use like the new Ethereum POA solution that we just put out, which stands for Proof of Authority. Basically, it's just another way to deploy your ledger technology or the blockchain technology and then attach it up there. There's been a couple other improvements around the upgrade scripts. So essentially now you can do full upgrades without having to like tear everything down and rebuild it. So that's been a bit more streamlined. And the pre-deployment, specifically around Azure AD, because there's a big kind of prerequisite you have to do there in Azure AD. So we've kind of streamlined that a little bit with some better scripting and things. So for those folks using Workbench, take a look at it. I know Russell would put that thing out here, so I won't steal his thing about the airlift. Yeah.
I guess this is for people that didn't understand most of what you've just been talking about. So what we've got the event being run in the UK, being supported and run by Microsoft Corp, but in the UK in London in September for partners. So if you're interested in developing out your blockchain practice within your partnership, then you can come along and attend that. It is by registration only. It's September the 10th through 11th at the Sheraton Skyline in London. If you're interested and you're a Microsoft partner looking to build out blockchain experience, then get in touch and I'll see if I can get you on the registration list.
Cool. Another way nice of you. I thought it was super cool. One thing that has nothing to do with blockchain, but I thought it was cool, was this data plane development kit for Linux VMs being GA now.
I was wondering, what is that?
It's kind of interesting. If you read the article that the PM has kind of put out here around this, it basically allows you to bypass essentially some of the network driver infrastructure in Linux when you're writing applications. So, I mean, I would see this as more like a real time where you're trying to squeeze a lot of performance out of the, particularly the networking. You can make it go faster using this kit, which people probably notice some similarity with the accelerated networking feature that we have as part of Azure. And I believe this piece is built on top of that, or accelerated networking is built on top of this technology. So I think it's really just making it available to more people to do other things with it if they'd like.
Excellent. Yeah. And I did catch a couple of, there were a couple of updates for the VNet support, right? VNet service endpoints now is available for MySQL and ProgressQL, which is really great. I think large enterprises that want to have a lockdown service can now take advantage of the VNet service endpoints with these two database services in Azure. And the just-in-time access, did you guys see that with the virtual machines?
No, I didn't see that.
So, you know, VMs, typically the way people hack into VMs is through the RDP port, right? People leave it open. And, of course, we've had this feature where you could configure NSG rules and lock it down and then open it. But then, you know, you got to have to open it up when you need it. Right now, right in the virtual machine blade itself, there's a button over there to enable the just-in-time access. And then that automatically does that, right? It locks down the VM with the NSG rules and opens it up for RDP access just for a short amount of time, for you to kind of jump in there, do your business, and then when you get out in a few minutes or hours, it'll automatically go away. And so that's, you know, I definitely recommend, I mean, anyone who's running an IaaS VM, they should not be keeping that RDP port open. It's amazing how many times I've seen, and we use Azure Security Center on some of our subscriptions, and there's always people trying to hack into the RDP port. We get alerts on that all the time. Definitely yes. Recommend you lock that down.
That's amazing, isn't it? And that's accessible via the blade, is it?
In yeah, the port? It's right in there. It's in preview now, but the button's right there in the blade. So there's really no excuse not to use that feature anymore.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's kind of like they even changed the provisioning. So for those who are just provisioning like single VMs and things out of the portal, like now when you go to provision them, I know definitely on the Linux side, I tried the Windows one as much, but it basically, it used to like automatically, if it was Windows, it would open 3389, it would open 22 on Linux. Now it doesn't do anything, but there's a section there that allows you to turn it on if you want. So you have to opt into it, basically, so it's more secure by default.
Yep. Yeah. And Cynthia, I saw you put something in there. You want to talk about the reboot control?
Yeah, so we've actually been working with, this is especially helpful for IaaS users or customers that wanted to take advantage of update management, which helps you manage all the Windows updates and patches. But one of the problems we've been running into is that some people might not want to let the machine just reboot. And now you actually have the option to set these reboot options when the updates do run to set it as reboot if required, always reboot, never reboot, and only reboot will not install updates. So I thought it's really neat in the sense that now you have a lot more control in how you're rebooting, and now you are able to really utilize more of these automated tools that are available for IaaS VMs.
Cool. That is indeed very, very useful, especially for large enterprises. They hate when they get rebooted in the middle of the day. So that's definitely a good thing. So I think that's a good roundup, right, on all the news
So Gina, I wanted to touch on one real quick, if that's okay.
Please.
So I was just really interested in the general availability of the expanded blueprint for FFIEC regulated workloads. So for our financial customers, this is going to be a huge win, just in the sense we now have blueprints to make it easier to move compliant workloads into the cloud, which from a security standpoint and with the level of regulation on some of these financial institutions and the data that they're interacting with. So I think this is definitely going to be really, really beneficial to some of those interested parties that do want to move into the cloud and are a little bit hesitant right now or don't exactly know what that pipeline looks like. So yeah, just wanted to call that out.
Neat.
Yeah, these are really good. I know there's some other ones around, some different standards and stuff, like for PCI compliance and stuff like that, and that they make a really good start point for people to start learning about how to be compliant in the cloud. It's a great example.
Excellent. All right, great. So let's move on to our special guests. Sivanay, please introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us, what you're passionate about in the Azure space and what you do at Microsoft, and then we'll just take it from there.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm a PM on the Azure Files, and I'm here to talk to you about Azure File Sync, which is the product we've been working on for the past few years, and we actually just became GA a month ago. Yeah, so...
Go ahead. So, now how long have you been with the group with the Azure Files group?
I've been with the Azure Files group since late September last year.
Okay, I know Azure Files has been one of those services that has kind of evolved, right, over time. I think originally we just had the blob storage and some of the other tables, queues, etc., and then Files was added on. Right. Give us just remind us what those files do, and then we can kind of move on to some of the more of the file sync feature.
So Azure File Sync is pretty similar to the other storage, like Azure Blobs and all of those, except that it's file storage. So essentially, like what the features you have on your file system, we're trying to bring to the cloud.
Okay.
So it's just the format that we store. We don't store in a blob format, even though the underlying storage mechanisms might be similar. We store files. So we keep, your hierarchical file, your file hierarchy and all of that.
Okay. And how do you access that? That's through SMB, right? Or how's Azure Files access compared to, say, Azure Blob Storage?
SMB.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. So tell us more about some of the Azure File Sync that just went GA then. What exactly is that? How does that help customers?
So Azure File Sync is a hybrid sync solution. That means that it syncs data. It replicates your data across your on-premises services and your Azure File Share. So it's a bidirectional sync process. You essentially have a sync group, or what we call a sync group, and we keep all your data in sync between this. So within this sync group, you can have a file share and then multiple servers that you attach to it, and all the information within that is kept in sync. And so that's the feature we call multi-site sync. I think the really cool thing about AFS, like the real magic of it that all of our customers love, is a feature we call cloud tiering. So this essentially lets your on-premises servers become caches for your hot data, with your Azure File Share being the central copy. So to explain this further, this means that we tier up your colder data to the cloud so that you only really need to have the warmest data there, like the ones that your customers access the most. And this allows, this gives them the benefits of having file servers on premises with the benefits of the cloud too, because, they get low latency, they get all of that, and yet they also get to leverage the entirety of Azure and not keep everything on premises.
That's very interesting. So what is the actual deployment on premises? Is that a Windows service or a utility? What's the manifestation on-prem?
So we work for Windows Server 2012, R2, and 2016. And basically all you have to do as an admin is install our agent. And once you install our agent, you can you pull it down, you register your server, you pick the volume or subfolder you want to be synced, and then it's kept in sync. And you can manage this all through the Azure portal.
I see. So you're basically syncing folders on that particular machine with folders in Azure. Is that correct?
Exactly. And then these folders are brought down to any other machines you have connected.
Now, go ahead. I think Cynthia was going to ask a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so are they brought down and then they become available offline as well? Or do they have to be connected to be able to access those files?
You have to be connected in this. you have to be connected, because what we do is that depending on if you have cloud tiering enabled, depending on how, like, the policy you've set on your individual servers. So, like, you can say, like, oh, I want 50% of my server to be kept free for other things, then 50% of the server to have the data pulled down. So okay. We'll pull down up to that 50% mark. And then, basically, if you're connected and you want to access a file as a user, it's completely invisible to you whether or not it's actually in Azure or on-premises, because your entire namespace is synced down. So to you, like, you basically, like, all you have to do is double-click to get it, and then if it's not on-premises, it'll be pulled down. So if your server were offline, all the files that are already there you can access, but the rest of the files that are in Azure that look like they're there on your server but aren't, you won't be able to access, because all it is a reparse point that points to the Azure File Share. So obviously you need connectivity to that for that.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So Sibane, what would you say have been the major factors that come into play when a customer decides that this is the solution they want to go with? Have you seen a lot of disaster recovery scenarios, or is it more just having that hybrid value that you're getting there? And what are kind of some of the main motivating factors that customers choose to go with this solution?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Thanks for asking. Disaster recovery is definitely part of it, and I'll touch on that in a minute. I guess, first of all, so a little history of how AFS was conceived. So my team was part of the Windows Server team prior to joining Azure. And we went and we asked people with file servers, like, what do you need? What are your pain points? Like, how can we really modernize what you're doing? Because I don't know if you know this, but file servers are actually, I think, 21 years old. So, like, they're legal to drink in the U.S., basically, and there's this whole ecosystem of them. But they can also be a bit of a pain. Like, we've had customers say, like, we have all this data, and people keep adding data, and we don't want to delete something, because what if it's important, but we don't know what's important, and we just keep having to add more and more servers. So there's this ever-growing storage footprint that's a monster, basically. And so part of, I guess, what I touched on earlier was cloud tiering. It addresses this issue, and it lets you turn your server into a cache. So you don't need to, like, it limits your storage footprint. It makes it fixed so that all you need is a server that can fit enough of your data on it that you won't have to constantly recall, but you only really need your hot data there. So I think that's one of the big draws of this. And you're absolutely right that disaster recovery is another very important thing that all IT pros, IT admins need to think about. Like, what if my server goes down? Like, what happens to my information? So as a consequence of our sync and tiering features, we have a third feature called fast disaster recovery that alleviates this. So basically, whenever your server gets struck by lightning and it goes down, all you need to do is connect a new server, download the agent, like, register it, and then as soon as you're registered, your namespace will be pulled down first. So this means that within a few minutes, like, any customer that you give access to the server, it'll seem like everything's just the same. Like, they'll see all of their directories there, everything that's in your Azure File Share, the namespace will be there, and then in the background, we'll be pulling down the other information. So, like, If you don't have cloud tiering turned on, then we'll just pull down everything slowly in the background. And if you do have it turned on, then we'll pull down up to the limit you've set. So this really lets your server endpoints, your, like, caches on premises, they're essentially disposable at this point. You can lose one and you can just attach a new server and get everything back quickly.
How often are writes, how quickly is a write sent back to the cloud? Like, if you update a local file, what's the time lag between that and the Azure storage getting updated?
I think a few seconds normally. Like, normally if I put something in, I pull up the portal, I refresh it, a few seconds later it's there.
Okay. And is it recommended or is it allowed for somebody to go and muck around with the Azure storage directly, or do you not recommend that?
So right now we recommend that it's admin access only. And there are a couple things that we're working very hard on, but we have certain limitations, I guess, in the file share where aren't completely enabled in the file share directly. So if you have permissions on your server endpoints, they'll sync between all your server endpoints perfectly. So for end users there, like only the files that they're allowed to touch, they'll be able to touch. But in the Azure file share, we haven't completely enabled this. And we also, like, things don't sync as quickly if you make changes in the Azure file share to on-premises. So it's true that these are some things that we're working on, and we don't recommend that you necessarily give an end user access to the Azure file share right now, but pretty soon we hope to change that. Like, Azure Files is adding AAD support in our upcoming release that should be aligned with Ignite or approximately around then. So we're definitely working on this, and we know that these are pain points.
That's good to hear. That was one of the features that I know certainly my customers and partners have been asking for as well on the Azure Files. So making that happen is really good. Security is one of the things I was going to ask about, actually. So and obviously it's coming in Azure on the file service, like you've just said, because currently it's SAS tokens, shared access signatures, or share key authentication, isn't it? But what about things like encryption? Is the data encrypted in transit? Is it encrypted at rest on the servers and in Azure as well?
I have to admit, honestly, I'm really sorry. I'm going to need to actually check on this.
That's okay.
I can check and email you the answer about encryption. Sorry, I can't tell you directly where it's encrypted.
Okay.
One question I had, too, around the monitoring, I guess, of this process, right? So if we set up a sync for a large enterprise, you can imagine there's probably many, many people, you know, updating files constantly, thousands in some cases, or tens of thousands. So as those things are being synced, you know, up there, is there any kind of thing for the admins to get, like, a management interface to know what's going on, like, as far as, like, how much has been synced, or if there's any issues with syncing, things like that, to kind of start to break down there? How do people manage these? Yeah.
Okay, that's a good question. So we're working on adding a lot of monitoring in the portal such that admins will be able to know, like, oh, like, sync seems to have been failing a lot for the past few hours, like, something's wrong, and setting up automatic alerts. We don't have that feature yet, but that feature is in the process. We have devs working on that right now. A current way to monitor, so you can, in the Azure portal, you can see the health of your sync group and everything else. Like, if you look at the AFS section of the portal, so you can definitely see, like, something's wrong. Like, it's unhealthy, it's healthy. Like, we show, like, sync errors, like, this is what's wrong, and for a lot of these sync errors, we give actual guidance on how to remediate it there. Another way to manage would be to, on your individual server endpoints, you can look at your logs and you can see if any issues are arising. But we know that we are aiming to have a more comprehensive monitoring solution and story coming soon.
That's great. And I guess the other question I would have is, people who maybe aren't on Azure right now, and then they're, you know, migrating or moving over there, they might have a tremendous amount of files right now. And is there any kind of optimized path, or should they just say, hey, set up sync, let it kind of run in the background? Is there a way to say, actually, we can use another tool to bulk load this stuff in there and then start syncing from that point? Is there anything like that?
There are different solutions. You can definitely sync. You can definitely set up sync, and it may take a while, but it is a feasible migration strategy. And like I said, the good thing about if you set up sync directly, it's that we sync your permissions between your different server endpoints, which is not something that every migration tool uses. But there are other migration tools like AZ Copy and other ones, and I think it really just depends on the customer use case. And I'm happy to send you more information about this later. If you have a particular customer with an individual use case, we can figure out what migration would be best for them.
Great. Yeah, it's awesome to know it's flexible. You know, we can support a couple different things. Yeah.
Cool. Sorry, just one question about pricing. Is there an additional cost for using FileSync over and above the storage and the data transfer?
There's a cost per server endpoint, but I believe that's only $5 right now per server endpoint. So there's basically no additional cost. The only thing we charge for is the operations that are done and then your egress cost. So it doesn't cost you any money to put your data in like any changes you make on individual server endpoints will go in for free. The charges are for when you pull it down to your other servers.
Cool.
But in terms of like using Azure File Sync as a service, there's your small $5, $10 cost of however many servers you have.
Right.
Thank you. And is there any limit on the size now? Or I'm sure if we talked about that already.
Mm-hmm. So right now we are slightly limited by the Azure Files share, the Azure File Share size of 5 terabytes, but you can almost think as Azure File Sync in the short term as being a really useful workaround for the limitations of Azure Files. And I say this because, so Azure Files, we only have a 5 terabyte share limit right now, although we're actually planning on launching 100 terabyte shares very soon, and you should hear an announcement about that in the very near future. But anyways, the thing with Azure File Sync is that although each share in the cloud can only be 5 terabytes, you can have multiple cloud shares. So as long as you're able to partition your data in such a way that you can sync up to different cloud endpoints, like different parts of the data, you can still keep all your data on premises in sync.
That's a cool idea. Very good. Yeah. How about running antivirus protection on files? Is that would it work with the Norton antivirus or Trend Micro or something like that, or would it interfere somehow these shared files?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. So we know for sure that Windows Defender works, and interop with other antiviruses is something that we're actively working on. And I guess I'd like to make the point that this interop issue, or like interop between like AV solutions or even like backup solutions, say like any kind of solution that pulls down and reads a lot of files, is an issue that's not really unique to AFS. It's something that all hierarchical storage management solutions have to think about, because like, I guess like if these files are in the cloud, then if a program comes and opens them up and reads them, this will cause them to be recalled, which obviously defeats the purpose of them being in the cloud. So at Microsoft, like we've gotten together and we now have a Windows platform level solution to this. So in Windows 10 and Windows Server 1709, we introduced this new secure attribute that essentially indicates that the file is not available on the disk. So the AV solution or backups, so like Norton antivirus or any other solution, they can, when they open a handle to this file, they see this attribute and then they know to skip this file because its contents aren't on the disk. And this is a little different from the current offline attribute that a lot of files you can set right now in files, because that attribute can be set by anyone, whereas this is a lot more secure and can only be set by very specific things at a specific, like, deep level. And so we've gone to conferences and we've spoken with all of the major antivirus backup vendors, like any other vendor that essentially just opens and reads our files. And basically everyone now, they either already support this attribute or they plan to do so in the very near future. And so I'm happy to tell you that in our next release of AFS, which, as I said, is aligned with Ignite, so the next month or so, we've added integration with this attribute. So we shouldn't see from then on any issues with AV or backup solutions as long as they support skipping files with this attribute set. Sorry, I know that was a kind of complex technical explanation, that's basically it.
It's very important that you explained that. Yeah, that was good. Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess a related note, so while I was talking about AV backup, because I was talking about on-premises antivirus and backup solutions that open things. I just wanted to make it clear that we know that backup is one of the core things that IT admins have to worry about, and that we already do have a very good story around this, in that we fully support backing up your Azure file share in the cloud. And this is important and probably better than on-premises backup, to be honest, if you're using Azure File Sync, because the thing is, your server endpoints they can really just be caches. They may not contain a full copy of all your data, assuming you have tiering turned on. So because your Azure File Share is a central copy, that means you really only need to back this up. And in fact, this might be the only copy of everything. And it also takes away a lot of the pain of backing up things like every night on premises. You have to like shut off certain applications. You have to figure out like how to move your backups off site to make sure that they don't get destroyed. So yeah, I think we're really addressing that pain point, and we're working on allowing third-party antivirus and backup solutions on premises to work and not interfere with anything.
Awesome. That's really good. Well, you know, this has been a lot of information. Is there any roadmap items other than the ones that you already mentioned that you'd like to let your listeners know about?
So I guess for Azure File Sync, we're working on a few different things. Right now, tiering the way it's set, you set the policy such that, you know, you define like how much of your volume you want to keep free versus have files on. We're looking at different options for this. So, for example, a date-based one where you can say, anything before August, I don't care about, put them all in the cloud. I only need the files from later there. Obviously, there are the changes in Azure Files I mentioned with AD support, larger file shares. We have a lot of things in the works, and I'm really looking forward to having them completed and be able to announce them soon.
Awesome. Yeah, it looks like Ignite's going to be an exciting time for you.
Great.
Well, thanks so much for all the insights and for telling us about Azure File Sync. It's a new service that just went GA, and definitely looking forward to taking a look at it. Any more questions for Sibonet before we let her go?
I'm just curious. OneDrive obviously has got some fairly good sync type functionality in it. Are you sharing any of the background underlying technology there with that team, or is your development path totally separate from that?
We share certain things, but a while ago we actually forked off from their path, so we work somewhat differently right now.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, I'm happy to clear up any differences between like OneDrive, SharePoint, and us if you want. I know people get a bit confused about the difference.
Well, I can see the different use cases for them and why you'd want to use one versus the other. But yeah, I'm just interested to see if the underlying stuff was common at all. And that stuff you talked about with the file attributes, I'm guessing that's what OneDrive uses now, where I see some files and it says, okay, it's in the cloud, it's not local yet. And then I click on it, it downloads it, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, OneDrive has been one of the teams that's been really pushing for antivirus solutions to honor this attribute. And I guess we're kind of hitching off of the work that they put in, like all of Microsoft are trying to get this holistic solution.
Right, okay. I mean, the UI changes that they've introduced to the Shell and the Explorer really work quite nicely, I think, now.
Thanks a lot, Sibonet. Thank you very much, Sibonet. If you have any links or resources you want to share, send them to me. I will add them along with the podcast show when we publish it tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This is an awesome podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining.
Bye. Thanks, Sibonet.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.